He's got a beautiful backswing.
Oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Oh my God, you had to deal with the golf course people too!
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
What is good, everybody? Welcome into the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. Sam Humphries, Taylor Williams, Jim Woodward with you as always. And Woody is back this week. I am very, very excited about that. Fellas, we got a massive show today. We got the Valspar preview coming up later in the show. We're also going to talk about what could they have possibly been talking about at this meeting in the Bahamas. But before we get to both of those things, we need to talk about Scottie Scheffler winning the Players in back-to-back years, also winning back-to-back weeks, the last 2 weeks on the PGA Tour. Scottie Scheffler goes out and fires 8-under par in the final round to finish at 20-under, one shot ahead of Brian Harman, Xander Schauffele, and Wyndham Clark at the Players Championship. T-Dub, what were your thoughts on that final round? I guess I'll just tell you, I thought it was just an absolute ball-striking clinic from Scottie Scheffler. Every shot and every drive he needed to hit, he hit right where he had to hit it in that final round, and I thought it was absolutely perfect.
Well, that's 100% right. And what it ended up being was by far the best tournament of the year, and I think it's going to be really hard to surpass it going forward. You look at it, you have the number one golfer in the world, clear number one golfer in the world, Scottie Scheffler. You have the number two player analytically in Xander Schauffele. You have the U.S. reigning U.S. Open champion in Wyndham Clark and the reigning British Open champion with Brian Harman, all with the chance to win the golf tournament coming down the stretch on what a lot of people consider the best three final holes to close a tournament. So it was exhilarating stuff. I don't know how you could ask for a better tournament, how it ended up ending out. You had drama all the way down to Wyndham Clark's 360 horseshoe, which was rivals Tiger's putt at Southern Hills horseshoe as the top two worst lift outs that you'll probably ever see. Like I mentioned, our man Brian Harman with a chance to win the tournament up there with our man Scott Tway on the bag. And then as I said, Wyndham Clark earlier, he hit a beautiful shot in on 16 with a chance to make eagle. Didn't do that. Then him and Schauffele hit great shots in there on 17. Both had birdie putts. Schauffele ends up missing it. But Woody, I think when you look back on it, I don't know how you could ask for a better end to a tournament.
That's what the PGA Tour has been looking for all year, guys, if you want to know the truth. I mean, I'm like you guys. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better golf tournament. Finally, what are we, though? We're whaled all the way into March. Yeah, this is what we've been waiting on. I think after watching a lot of that golf this week, Scheffler, I'm not going to say he's anything close to Tiger. In fact, that was funny. That one guy was talking about Scheffler. We only got 11 more years to be number one, and then you'll tie Tiger. And those kinds of statements are just so unbelievable when you think that's how long he was the number one player in the world from those rankings. And that was back when those rankings mattered, and he kept it for 11 years. So that just shows you how dominating he was. But Scheffler's as close as I've seen to a guy when coming down the stretch, very rarely does he back up. He doesn't give away. Not even close to what Xander does. Xander seems like, unless he's got an unbelievable lead, he's going to find a way to just kiss it all goodbye. I mean, it's crazy how he does it. I love what we're seeing in Wyndham Clark. You got that bulldog, literally a Georgia bulldog, and Harman. But Scheffler, guys, Sam, you said it best. Those shots he hit coming down the stretch, there was never a doubt they weren't going to be the perfect place in the fairway. They're going to be somewhere near that pin. And, again, he had a pretty good putting week, guys. So, adds up to this guy's starting to look like when he tees it up, you better watch him because plus he had a hurt neck this week, I guess, guys. I don't know. I saw him working on it. I saw the tape, that kinetic tape around his neck. So, I mean, that's Tigerish. He's not even playing with, being 100%, and he's still winning. So, this was pretty impressive.
This might have been Scottie Scheffler's most impressive win, like you said, Woody, because he didn't have his A-plus game. He didn't even have his A-minus game this week. I was doing a radio show on Saturday afternoon when Scheffler was halfway through this golf tournament and I was talking about how Scottie Scheffler was putting the worst out of anybody in the top 20 up to that point. Oh, by the way, yes, he did have a neck injury as well to deal with, and he was getting massaged and everything, and you thought, well, it's just not Scottie's week this week. The putter isn't quite as hot as it was at Bay Hill. Then all of a sudden, he plays his last 21 holes, 11 under par, T-Dub. This guy has a different gear that I'm not sure any player in the world, even including Rory and John Rahm. Scheffler has a gear that those guys don't even have. And maybe an intimidation factor as well.
Well, just to put it into perspective, Sam, looking at what he did for the week, he gained more than a shot and a half off the tee, and he gained more than a shot and a half approach dealing with the neck injury. It was absolutely stellar stuff. He gained 3/4 of a shot around the greens, which is extremely hard to do. And then he gained shots on the greens, 0.32. But you have to go all the way down to Aubert down in sixth place to find anyone who was remotely close to that strokes gain, putting everyone else, Harmon, Schauffele, Clark, Fitzpatrick, even Siwoo Kim, who kind of backdoored a top six finish. They all gained more than a shot on the green. So relatively to those top guys, he was putting worse. But looking at how Scheffler had putted leading up to this, whenever he didn't make the mallet change before that, at the Genesis, he lost almost a full shot on the greens for the tournament. Since then, last week at Arnold Palmer, gaining 1.3 on the greens and then barely gaining strokes this week. But still, that is an improvement. And with his ball striking, we talked about this forever in the offseason. Well, which one's going to happen first? Is the ball striking going to come back to the median, or is the putting going to get better? And not only has the putting gotten better, but the ball striking's actually better. He's gaining 0.2 shots more approach to green, which is an absolutely large amount. Even for someone at that caliber, that's extremely good performance for sure. He's only played 7 events at 2024, but in that small sample size, he's hitting the ball even better than he did last year, Woody. He's going to be a clear favorite at Augusta, and I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be able to win that tournament either, and I don't see, really, maybe his injury gets worse. That might be the only thing that's going to keep him from playing back golf.
Or his wife has that baby. Other than that, I'm with you guys. I don't know what's going to get in the way, but for goodness sake, please, let's everybody quit talking about Rory when you got Scottie Scheffler. Rory can't even carry his bag. Rory's not even near the player of Scheffler is right now. Now, will it change? I don't think it will. I think Scottie Scheffler's going to just keep getting better and better, guys. That's what I think. The only guy that could maybe keep up with Scheffler is Schauffele. Schauffele's the only guy that got a little bit of that ball striking, but even Schauffele hits some really crooked shots under the gun. So, you know, I just don't see anybody that is close to Scheffler. He's Tigerish the way he's getting out there now and just dominating with that ball striking, and that putting's getting better. I'm with you guys. When you see his name on the leaderboard, you better beware, because I don't think he's backing up. He's coming, just like what Sam said. You know, he played those last 21 holes, 11 under is what you said, Sam. That's just mind-boggling to me how good that is.
It really is, Woody. And I guess I'll mention Schauffele since you just mentioned him. Yes, Schauffele does have all of the technical tools that you need to be a star on the PGA Tour. He has the ball striking. He has the putting. Everything looks solid until he's under the gun. And now Schauffele is 1-9 finishing PGA Tour events when playing in the final group. I'm talking about winning PGA Tour events when he is in the final group on Sunday. 1-9. And just adding to a list of tournaments that Xander Schauffele had in the palm of his hand and he couldn't get it done. And then Wyndham Clark. Wyndham Clark, yes, he did miss putts barely on 16 and barely missed it on 18 with the U-turn. But Wyndham Clark was leaking a little oil all day on Sunday. He couldn't hit the driver on the face of the planet. He kept, you know, hitting that big, high kind of fan with the driver way high out to the right. I don't know whether he was hitting it off the heel or, you know, just coming out of it a little bit, but he couldn't seemed to figure out the driver on Sunday and put himself in some precarious situations in the rough where he wasn't able to score on Sunday when a guy like Scheffler's out there making birdie after birdie and not making any mistakes, and Scheffler's out there hitting driver on holes that these guys are hitting irons on. This is why Scottie Scheffler ended up not only winning the golf tournament, but forcing basically Wyndham Clark to go eagle birdie on 16 and 18, T-Dub. And then obviously he got the birdie on 17. Wyndham did make that putt, but Wyndham didn't make the putts that he had to make on 16 and 18. But even before that, I think is where Wyndham Clark lost the golf tournament.
Yes, I agree for that for sure. Yeah, you look in the final rounds as well. He also lost 1.8 shots on the greens in that final round. So he did not putt very good whatsoever. He actually chipped the ball very well, gained more than a shot there. And so that was pretty good sign. Then the shots that he hit down the stretch to be able to gain a little bit of momentum was good. But yeah, the bogeys on 10 and 14 in there as well definitely derailed him. He wasn't able to, as you alluded to, get the momentum. And you look back on it, he also had that flub shot into 17 on Saturday. So really from that point on, he actually did hit a great shot in after that to make a bogey, a very clutch bogey at that. But since that point, really just didn't, as you say, get the momentum that he needed going on. And to lose the tournament only by one shot in the horseshoe is definitely painful. But he'll look back on it, Woody, and know that Clark, in this sense, look back on it and know that he made some mistakes. He had a 5-shot lead with 36 holes to play. And you'll be surprised. A lot of times you think that would be a thing that happens like 90% of the time. It's not even close to that, just because there's so much golf to be played at that point. But at that point, you have to look back and reflect on ways that you kind of lost the golf tournament. Scheffler going out and playing great in the final round is hard to do. But Clark going 4-under on the final 36 holes definitely could have done better than that.
Clark didn't. He just didn't have a good weekend. He never did anything that just looked like he wanted to take command of that golf tournament. I think that final day, that it seemed like to me that Clark and Shoffley were thinking mano a mano. The two of them kind of got lost in each other. And we've seen that a lot of times. Guys, you've seen that golf tournament you've played in. You're playing against that guy in your pairing that you think, if I can beat him, I can win this golf tournament. And then all of a sudden, you might look up on that leaderboard and boom, where did Scotty Scheffler come from? And I think that kind of puts a more of a shock into you than anything else, that you're thinking, oh man, well, this, I was thinking this might be a 2 or 3-man race with Harmon. Well, now we got Scotty Scheffler in there. And kudos to Scheffler. Like I always say, you got guys that go out and win golf tournaments, you got guys that hang on and win golf tournaments, and you got guys that go out and lose golf tournaments. Well, you look at all the greats, whether it's Nicklaus, Palmer, especially Tiger, I promise you, those guys that are the great ones that you talk about, very seldom they give up leads, especially Tiger. He was the best front runner you'll ever watch. Well, I'm starting to see that. Whether Scheffler's behind or he's out in front, it doesn't matter. He finds a way to get to the top, and then he really doesn't back off from it. So, you know, unless Shoffley figures out how to finish a golf tournament, Wyndham Clark gets a little bit better ball striker. I don't know who's going to beat Scheffler. I really don't. Like I said, the only thing can kind of derail him a little bit, and we all know about this because we've watched out there on tour a number of times, you know, when they had their first child, life changes a lot. And, you know, ask our old buddy Colby. His life changed when he had that baby. And it will change for Scotty Scheffler, too. But he and his wife have such a great connection, and she's so supportive of everything he does. I don't look for it to faze him much either. Like I said, the only way I really get him at the Masters is if that baby comes during the Masters, because I promise you, Scotty Scheffler will leave. He will not be at Augusta during that tournament if he's going to have that baby. I'll tell you that right now. I don't believe he'll play.
No, I agree with that. And then as far as Brian Harmon, I mentioned Xander and I mentioned Wyndham. And, yes, it was heartbreaking for Wyndham. And, yes, the focus in that final round kind of seemed like it was on how Xander just wasn't getting it done again. But Brian Harmon had a chance to sneak up there and win the golf tournament, but I thought he lost it on 16 when he didn't hit the ball in the fairway, wasn't able to kind of go at the green, even though he's a shorter hitter. It just, he had to lay up and then he had a bad shot, bad third shot in there, didn't give himself a look at birdie on 16, and then didn't get birdies on 17 or 18, which are tough holes to birdie, obviously. But I felt like he missed his opportunity at 16 to really get some momentum headed into the last couple holes.
I do agree for sure that 16, not being able to get a birdie there on the 70th hole of the tournament, was very, very costly for sure. And you look back on it as well, he's going to look at a couple of different stretches of golf earlier in the tournament. He only shot even par in the first round. So he played the last three rounds at 19 under. He made an abundance of birdies. Let's see. He made six, seven. He made six. He made eight birdies. I may be off here by one or two. He made eight birdies in the second round and an eagle. He made nine birdies in the third round. And then he made five birdies in the final round. So he was on absolute birdie fest. He threw in a few bogeys there. He bogeyed nine in the third round as well. He hit his drive over to the left and had to try to hit it right-handed and went up against a tree. And luckily, he was able to get relief from the cart path, or he made it even worse than bogeys. So he had a few costly mistakes there. But Woody, for our man Brian Harmon, being able to look back on it and him not being able to get off to a good start in the first round, and then also in the final round, he was one over through six, wasn't able to birdie two, and made a bogey on six after that, proceeded to birdie four out of the next five. But I think looking back on those two stretches of golf, you look back on only losing the tournament by one shot and playing those stretches so poorly definitely cost him.
Yeah, we always focus on those last holes because we think, well, that's, you know, where it's won or lost. But no, it's won or lost when you tee off Thursday. And you're right, Thursday rounds will cost him not winning that golf tournament. I think 16 for him is a tough hole, though, guys, because the way that hole sets up, you have to kind of want to draw it around that corner, or you got to be high, be able to hit a long high ball off the corner of those trees. Well, Harmon loves to draw the ball. Well, he's a lefty, so that's a problem on that hole. He'd have to cut it off that tee to feed it around that corner, and he doesn't have the power to go up and over those trees. So that hole doesn't set up that good for him. I was kind of surprised the shot that I thought set up really good for him was 17, because that pin was perfect for his little draw. You catch that hill and suck it right down there to where the ball feeds to that hole. I thought that was a green light special shot for him, and he just didn't get aggressive. He just kind of left it out there and then left that little bit of a long putt and didn't make that one. Putt he hit on 18, I thought, was kind of a poor putt. Either he misread it really bad or he just hit a real bad putt, because unlike Clark's that caught a lot of the hole, you know, Harmon's was low from the get-go. It didn't have a chance. So, and again, Harmon's left-handed, so he's putting the dreaded left to right, which is a pretty tough putt. Clark's got the right to left. You know, we've all played enough golf. You're a right-handed player. You kind of like those right to lefts to feed in there. The left to rights are tough. So that was a hard putt for Harmon, I think, to make. But the bottom line with that golf tournament, guys, it's the only one this year I've actually sat and watched most of the golf tournament and truly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, it was an absolute electric factory coming down the finish of this golf tournament, something that PGA Tour fans have been clamoring for all year. Where are the big-name players? We got them at the Players' Championship, and everyone seemed to have a chance to win the golf tournament, and then the best name out of all those names ends up winning the golf tournament in dramatic fashion, considering I've never seen quite a U-turn like that for that amount of money. Actually, I know I've never seen a U-turn quite like that for that amount of money. Absolutely heartbreaking for the former Cowboy Wyndham Clark, but at the same time put himself behind the eight ball earlier on in the round. Fellas, Scottie Scheffler, we've been talking over the past year and a half with how good the ball striking was that he is on the cusp of doing some historical things, and he's on a streak, I guess you could call it right now, you know, since February of 2023. Listen to this. There's been 20 signature events plus major championships. Scottie Scheffler has finished top 10 in 15 of those. His worst finish was at the 2023 FedEx, where he finished tied for 31st. His second worst finish was at the Open in 2023, where he finished tied for 23rd. Other than that, all of the other finishes where he didn't finish top 10 were tied for 12th or better, T-Dub. The guy is playing the best golf that we have seen since prime Tiger Woods.
Well, just to put it in perspective, you go to the Data Golf all-time rankings, where they'll take every player and look at their peak performance and where they were on their strokes gained per round average. Tiger set a precedent that will never be met again at 3.89 shots per round, almost four shots per round. Second highest was VJ in 2004 at 2.96. So even second best is almost a full shot behind Tiger. Scottie Scheffler's performance here as of the last year or so, I think that's how far this goes back whenever they calculate this. is fourth all-time. Third is David Duvall back in 99. It's ahead of Ernie Els, ahead of John Rahm, what he was doing last year. It's ahead of Spieth and Day in 2015. It's ahead of Rory's best golf. It's ahead of Eric, Greg Norman. The analytics only go back to, I believe, 1990 or something like that, so we don't have Jack and Arnie and all that. It's ahead of guys like Phil Mickelson. It's so you look at it, Woody, and it's of historical proportions what he's been doing.
Oh, I think when you stop and think about it, the guy will always try to compare to now is Tiger, okay? Back in my days, it was Jack, but now it's Tiger. Everybody's got to try to figure out how close are you to what Tiger was. I can only think of a couple of stats at Tiger that still just boggles my mind. In 2000, he averaged 27 putts per round, guys. Now, for our listeners out there, just so you think about this for a minute, okay? Two putt every hole is 36 putts, okay? He averaged 27. Averaged, okay? For that many rounds, he averaged 27 putts.
And he was hitting probably 15 greens a round?
He might not have been hitting that many, Sam, because I don't think he's the ball striker that Scheffler is right now. I mean, he was a great ball striker. But at that time, Tiger had something that a lot of guys didn't have was length. So what he basically had is every time there was a par 72 golf course, he was playing a par 68 golf course. Okay, right. But when you really think about 27 putts around, you know, guys, that's just mind-boggling to me. Because if you average 29, 30 putts around, you're pretty dang good, okay? 27 is off the charts. That was the same year he did three putt, one hole, the whole year in 2000. These kinds of stats, we'll look back and go, there's no way, that's got to be wrong. But it wasn't. That's just how dominating he was. You know what his stroke average was in 2000? 68.6.
That's just ridiculous.
Average. Average. 68.6.
Also, his GIR percentage was 75% in 2000, which led the PGA Tour by 3 percentages as well to go along with the 27 putts around.
Basically, he had all four majors in his hands in 2000. He won one in 99, but then he got the other three in 2000. And he won that, I think, on that year, it was either 8 or 9 tournaments that year, guys. And he didn't play that much. He might have played 21 events, 20 events. He did not play that many events. We will not see. I don't care how good Scheffler is right now. We will not see that kind of statistical domination. I don't know, guys, if you'll ever see again in your lifetime. I won't see it mine. There's no chance I'll see it mine.
No, I agree.
So when you talk about the GOAT, when you guys do talk about the GOAT, there was nobody, and I'm a Jack Nicklaus fan. I still say he's got 18, he has 15. But in that stretch, from probably 99 to 2008, with injuries and everything else we threw at it, plus he had a lot of off-course issues that got in the way, he was by far the best I've ever seen, bar none. It's not even close.
No doubt. And he was the most dominating off the tee. He was the most accurate with the irons, and he was the best putter in the world. Now, Scheffler has two of those, but he's not the most, he's not the best putter in the world, you know. But on a week like this, where he didn't putt as well as he did at Bay Hill, but he did gain shots on the field average this past week at the Players Championship, he wins the golf tournament because the ball striking is that good. That's why I don't like comparing Scottie Scheffler to Tiger Woods, but it's the best we've seen since Tiger Woods. Do you see what I'm saying?
There you go. And you guys are exactly right. And what you got to realize is we now can say with Scottie Scheffler, like we used to could say with Tiger Woods, if Scottie Scheffler does not lose strokes on the greens, the rest of those guys are playing for second. I'm telling you, I think that. And that's Tigerish. That's what we used to say about Tiger Woods. The rest of these guys are playing for second if Tiger's even close to his A game. If Scottie Scheffler does not lose strokes on the putting green, I think they can call in the dogs and piss on the fire. The hunt's over. They're done.
And T-Dub, if he starts putting, there is going to start to be an intimidation factor – not like Tiger Woods, but where, you know, you see a name like Scheffler on that leaderboard and guys might tense up a little bit. I saw it happen with Scheffler in junior golf. I saw it happen when I played against Scheffler in college golf. I think it's going to start happening if he continues to just win tournaments regardless, even on weeks where he's not playing his best golf like last week at the Players.
Well, he's trending in the right direction, gaining strokes on the greens the last two events. And as I mentioned earlier, with the ball striking actually improving, which is a scary thing that everyone should consider. Woody brings up a good point, but the baby on the way, who knows how that'll throw a whole wrench into the system. So we'll have to just kind of sit back and wait and see on that. But the times that I've watched him, I mean, obviously going back to junior golf, but things have changed a lot. He's obviously a great golfer then. But what I saw at Southern Hills and then at the Masters when I watched him hit balls this last year is it's a pure ball flight, but it's not like Tiger-esque ball flight. The thing is, it's just the same every single time. He knows exactly what he's doing. It's just like a robot going in there. And you think, as we talked about earlier with the footwork, that it would be all wonky out there and he wouldn't be able to do it. But it's every time it's the exact same. It's the same trajectory. You can tell it's the same spin. It's going through the wind the exact same, which makes things a lot easier if the wind gets up to 15 or 20 and you're able to know exactly what your ball flight is going to do. Obviously, a lot of guys do, but he's to a higher extent than even they are because it is every single shot doing exactly what he wants to do. There's just the times that I watched him, he's off by maybe 2 yards on the target that he's trying to hit.
What he's so good at right now, and like I said, I got to watch him more this weekend than I've seen all year. I wanted to watch it. And what I saw, besides the fact that I think he stands a little bit more upright than most of those guys do out there. He doesn't have much bend in his waist. But what he is phenomenal at, where those other guys, when you were talking about Sam, you said Wyndham Clark kind of loses it right so sharply. What I'm amazed at is Scheffler coming through the ball as quickly as that club's traveling. He has such control of that club face. When he hits that little cut, his club face is almost slightly shut, which will start that golf ball just left of where he wants, and then it'll come right back because he's got such a low exit to the left. Everything he hits like that looks like he's going to be hitting a fade, but he's not afraid of hitting a pull. He doesn't leave that club open the way I saw Xander and Wyndham Clark do it.
Well, do you think part of that, Woody, do you think part of that has to do with the fact that he does clear out the left side with all the crazy footwork?
Yes, without a doubt. He's the only guy I saw this week that I truly believe he knows where his club face is in that hitting area far more than those other guys. And when those other guys, when they double cross, they'll miss it left, okay? And that's why they tend to leave that face open, guys. So they're so afraid, as if they shut that face, they're afraid it's going to be a double cross, where Scotty is not. He has his face, comes into the ball, just slightly closed, which is the same way Tiger used to always talk about when he hit a cut shot. I'll never forget when I heard Tiger Woods say to me in a clinic at Valhalla, they were doing this interview with him, and I heard him say, when I hit a draw, I set up with my club face open. When I hit a cut, I set up with my club face closed. And I thought, what the hell did he just say? Because I'd always heard just the opposite. And he was saying, when he cuts the golf ball, he wants his swing to be exiting to the left, but he also wants to make sure the ball starts to the left. The only way to do that is club face got to be closed slightly. Because he's exiting so hard the way Scotty Scheffler does, what's the ball do? It starts left, but then it cuts back. Okay? When you look at Xander and Wyndham Clark, they're trying to exit left and make the club go over their left too. They don't trust the club face position. They won't square it or even close it. They leave it open. That's when they hit that spinny balloon ball. That's their fear of left. Scheffler doesn't show any fear left. Because let me tell you something, guys. Those holes that he's coming down that stretch on, 12, the water's left, okay? On 13, the par 3, water left. And that pin was tucked as far over in that corner as you can get it. A lot of those guys are trying to take it off the right side of the green and roll it down there. That's Scotty Scheffler. He took it right over about he had maybe 6-8 feet to the left of the pin, and he didn't matter to him. He didn't have any fear of left. 14, where they're all afraid of yanking it over there in the bunker in the lake, and they ballooned it out there to the right. Not Scheffler. He didn't do it. 15, par 4. I can go through all these holes. I'm just telling you when I watched him. 18, perfect example of trusting. What are you afraid of on 18 tee? The lake, right? Where'd Scotty Scheffler hit it? Right down the middle. That lake, there might as well have been dirt out there. He didn't anymore look at that lake. But that's the only thing I can tell you that I saw this week watching his golf swing. Little more upright. Forget his footwork. Don't even watch his footwork. Just watch the clearing of the left side and how controlled his club face always is. That's why he just throws darts. Everything he hits is going right at the hole.
No doubt. And the most impressive thing that Scotty does to me, Woody, is most of the time he does hit a cut with his driver, but he works the irons both ways. Like on 18, hit a beautiful, like you just said, he cut one out there just perfectly on 18 into the fairway and then drew it into the pin on 18. And that's why he was shocked when the ball bounced right. But that's what great ball strikers do that a lot of guys can't do, even professionals out there. And Scotty Scheffler works the irons both ways and is able to attack pins that other guys can't attack because of that.
Like I said, guys, I think he's got the best control of his club face of anybody out there. And I'm not sure how he and Randy Smith figured it out, but they got it figured out. This young guy knows where that club face is in that impact area. And that's, I mean, like we were saying, that's Tiger-ish. Nobody has control of that club face as good as Tiger did. This guy's close. I'll tell you what, he's impressive when he hits a golf ball.
T-Dub, any final thoughts on Scheffler before we wrap up the players and hit a break?
I think the only thing that needs to be said here, you look going back over the last calendar year, the four analytic stats, off the tee, approach, around the green, and putting, you look at him, he's number one off the tee, he's number one approach by a mile, and he's number one around the greens. Putting, he's 110th, but that's better than 260th or whatever he was just a few months ago. So if he's vaulting up in that category, he's literally the best player in the game at three of the four major categories. Whenever you do that, you're going to win a lot of golf tournaments. And I'm glad that I picked him last week getting $4.5 million because it rectified my horrible Justin Thomas pick who missed the cut, who's made me mad after what he said about Mino Pereira. So I shouldn't have picked him anyway, but I did because I wanted to try to get a pick. So thank you, Scotty Scheffler, for bailing out Justin Thomas. I appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. That's one thing. I'm glad you mentioned that, T-Dub. His short game, Scotty Scheffler's short game goes so unnoticed, number one, because he hits a ton of greens. But number two, I think some people think, oh, he's just a bad putter. He must be a bad chipper too. No, he is literally the best chipper in the world. One of the best short games in the world, right, T-Dub? I think it goes unnoticed.
You just think of countless times where in big clutch moments coming down, especially these last two rounds in the final round where he's gained more than seven shots on the field both of those rounds. That is Tiger-level stuff. He had times where he did miss the greens, and he hit great shots, which at those courses you can get in some a pretty tricky situations, especially around Sawgrass. You get a lot of uneven lies, classic Pete Dye stuff, and then the rough at Bay Hill is extremely gnarly. So the touch that he has, to be number one in that category with as good as ball striker as he is, that's something that comes around very, very seldom.
You know, the last thing I'll add about Scheffler that you got to love about him, he's a good dude. He's a good Christian. He's a good guy. You don't hear him bashing anybody. You don't, you know, if he has a life we don't know about, he keeps it really hidden. But I don't think he does. You know, he's just, this is the kind of poster boy that you love to have as your star. The PGA Tour, man, they need to be making everything they can about him, not Rory. That's not the guy to be putting out there. Scheffler's the guy to put out there now.
No doubt. Scheffler is the star, not only on the PGA Tour, but in professional golf. Scheffler's better than anybody on LIV, obviously. Even better than Jon Rahm or Brooks Koepka. I don't care. If I had one round to play for the rest of my life and I only had golfers in the world right now, I'm going with Scotty Scheffler. Fellas, last thing I'll say as far as T-Dub bringing up his one and done picks for the week, he had Scheffler. One of them won the tournament, and he had Justin Thomas. One of them missed the cut. I had Hideki Matsuyama, who finished tied for sixth in the golf tournament, played some really solid golf, shot 5 under in the final round, continues to be one of the guys to look at as we head into Augusta after his win at Riviera, playing some really solid golf recently. And then I have Max Homa, who I think made the cut and finished somewhere down by DFL of the guys that made the cut, T-Dub. He also almost killed a guy.
Yes, that was a very interesting video to see that, the ball coming in screaming hot at about 100 and how many ever miles an hour. That would have been very intimidating. After shooting, what did he shoot, 6 under or whatever in the first round, comes out and finishes T64. So actually drove the ball absolutely horrible, but lost almost a full shot off the tee. So whatever was going on with the driver for Max Homa last week, Sam, definitely did not play out very well for your pick.
No, not great. What, you ever almost killed a guy when you were playing with fans?
You know, I was lucky, Sam. I never had that big a gallery. Nobody even knew I was out there. Now I almost killed a few squirrels. You know, I'd get a squirrel or two. But let me tell you something. If they were lined up like that when I was getting ready to hit a shot, you know what I'd have done? I'd have said, hey, you better back up because I will kill you. I mean, I've got that game.
I haven't ever seen it like that where someone, where a guy like Max Homa just absolutely hits a low beaming stinger right into somebody 20 yards in front of him. And people,
yeah.
I mean, we've seen it for years that people, especially with Tiger, line up in tunnels. Like, I know it's Tiger Woods, but I don't trust it that much.
Care.
Yeah, I don't care. Yeah. And Max Homa finally just absolutely clobbered somebody.
Well, you know, Sam, here's the thing you got to look at with this. I mean, they can think they're all that, but if they were all that, they wouldn't be that deep in the woods.
That's
you
a good
know,
point.
If they kept hitting them right down the fairway, they wouldn't be over there in the crap. So that's when you really are giving them more credit than they deserve. And if you've been hit with a golf ball, which I have, you only want to get that one time in your life, and you don't want to do it again. So they're just crazy, those people were.
My point is, this was not Max Homa's fault whatsoever. It's that
None.
Idiot standing there where, by the way, that shot could have gone exactly where Max Homa was wanting it to go. Sometimes these people just stand way too damn close, T-Dub.
Way, way.
It's just a risk versus reward thing. Like, I don't understand. Okay, so what? If you stand close, do some people actually want to be hit by the ball so they'll get a signed glove or something like that? Is that worth potentially having hitting your temple and you coming down and never taking another breath? It just doesn't seem like something that sounds very smart. The people that want to do it, it's their own life. Let them make their own decisions. They want to get some little cool shot for Instagram or X or Facebook, whatever they want to do. So be it. I'm going to go ahead and not risk my life to have a golf ball 30 yards away from me come screaming by my head or potentially hit me. So I'll get behind it to try to analyze the swing type of thing. Those people don't want to do it. It's their own decision, but I would highly, strongly advise against doing something that stupid.
No doubt. By the way, couple other guys before we hit the break here. Matthew Fitzpatrick finishes solo fifth place, so he makes over $1 million this week at the Players' Championship. He's playing better golf after he realized that there were weights in the butts of his irons, guys. And so that's a crazy story. And then you also had Ludvig Åberg finish 5 under in his final round to finish the golf tournament at 14 under, solo eighth place. T-Dub, you ever heard of a guy forgetting that he had weights in his clubs?
That is a very strange thing to do. I was thinking about that, and especially someone as meticulous as he is, you would think would have been Johnny on the spot on that, would have tried it out and said, oh, well, this doesn't work. We need to go ahead and get around this. So, yeah, it's weird to forget about something like that. And for the length of time, too, didn't he say it was like a year or some reference along that? And that's an extremely ridiculous amount of time. To think, oh, yeah, I had this extra, and it was a decent amount of weight. I can't remember it exactly off the top of my head, but I remember hearing it. I'm thinking, wow, that's a couple of swing weights. And for guys at that level, that is a massive difference. So to forget that is a very, very costly mistake, and hopefully he gets it fixed, maybe someone to look at, because he had been playing very, very poorly up to this point.
What, have you ever forgotten you had some weight in your clubs or something crazy like that?
No, once again, Sam, I didn't have big galleries, and I didn't think about it that much. I just tickled pink when I had all 14. I thought, wow, dude, I got a full set. I'm ready to go. So, no, I didn't tinker with my equipment much at all. I really didn't.
No, me either. But Matty Fitz, Mr. Skill, definitely a tinkerer
for
sure.
He will tinker. Yeah, he will.
Fellas, like I said, Scottie Scheffler not only wins back-to-back weeks on the PGA Tour, but also becomes the first ever to win back-to-back Players Championships, the favorite headed into Augusta National. We need to hit a break here on the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. If you are in the Oklahoma City area, our radio show this week is Thursday evening because the Thunder play on Wednesday evening. So we will be with you Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. Central Time in Oklahoma City on 98.1 WWLS, the sports animal. After the break, we're going to talk about this secret or not-so-secret meeting in the Bahamas between Jay Monahan, Yasser, and maybe even some other special guests. We'll tell you who they are after the break here on Oklahoma's Leader in Golf, the 73rd Hole. We would like to welcome in a new sponsor to the 73rd Hole Podcast, Jimmy Austin Golf Club in Norman, Oklahoma. If you have any Sooner apparel needs or apparel needs in general, this is the golf shop to go to. Jimmy Austin Golf Shop has been rated as the top merchandising facility in all of the South Central section 5 out of the last 7 years. In addition to their phenomenal pro shop, Jimmy Austin is also going to be hosting a Korn Ferry event again this year, the Compliance Solutions Championship. On June 20th through the 23rd, you can come out to Jimmy Austin and see the stars of the future on the PGA Tour competing in the Compliance Solutions Championship on the Korn Ferry Tour. I also want to encourage all of our listeners out there to go out to Jimmy Austin and play some golf. It's one of, if not the best, public facility in Oklahoma, and it always ranks in the top 5 best courses in Oklahoma to play golf. So if you want to play like a champion, next time you're booking your tee time, remember, there's only one Jimmy Austin Golf Club. And we are back on the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. If you're not already following us on social media, definitely go and do that at the 73rd Hole on X and at 73rd Hole on Instagram. I am at Sam Humphreys 34 as well on X, and I was tweeting about this yesterday and then into today. There was a big meeting in the Bahamas. Tiger Woods and the PGA Tour player directors have assembled in the Bahamas for a high-stakes meeting yesterday with Yasir Al-Rumayyan and PIF leadership, where they said they discussed the future of golf. There were private jets belonging to the tour, Tiger Woods, and the PIF all on the ground in Nassau. So we know that this obviously happened. And then after the meeting, Jay Monahan came out and sent out this memo basically saying that the talks were constructive and they had a good conversation with Yasser during the meetings. And the PGA Tour is saying that it's doing its due diligence process for its selection process for the PGA Tour enterprises investors. Monahan also said they're not going to talk about it until a deal's done publicly. What do you make of this meeting between Yasser and Tiger and Jay Monahan, T-Dub?
I think it's a good sign that no bad news came out of it. I think it would have been a little preposterous to think they would have gone down here and within 28 hours of the meeting happened that we would have come to a deal being done. That's just not a realistic world. Even if hopefully they made the question is what percentage of move did they make? Did they get half their details figured out? Did they get 25%? Did they get 90% of them figured out? That is the question that we have to be seen. Maybe potentially will there be a little bit closer to a merger than we anticipated going forward. I think that we're still going to have a little bit of a long process here to figure it out. I think that hopeful maybe by the end of the year something will happen. I would be fairly shocked if it happened within the next couple of months, Woody. I just think there's too many moving parts here.
But it's a good sign that there wasn't rumors of throwing chairs and pointing fingers and yelling at people. That's a positive sign, in my opinion.
Anytime they have communication, it's good. If I was on the Live, if I was John Rahm and Cam Smith and Taylor Gooch and these guys, I would want to be able to go to one of those meetings, okay? Because not that they don't trust Yasser. I know they do, but I'd still want to be part of that because we're talking about their future too, guys. How's this going to work out? Because if they're told, yeah, you really can't come back unless you qualify again, that's bogus. That's just bogus is what that is. So I know one thing I said to Sam last week sometime, T-Dub, we were talking, and I said that Giuseppe and Pinocchio, a lot of people, they might not know that, but Pinocchio's the puppet that you can just add strings on him and his nose would grow as he lied. Well, let me just tell you, I think I figured this deal out. What you have is you have Tiger Woods behind the scenes with these strings on Jay Monahan. He's Pinocchio. It's his little puppet. That's why this guy is still there. If you think for 1 minute that Jay Monahan is running the PGA Tour and Tiger Woods is not, well, you're an idiot is what you are. You're just plumb stupid. Because I promise you, when all of this stuff finally gets through and everything else, Tiger's going to have such a footprint on this, you're not going to believe it.
No, I agree with you, Woody. There is no way that the PGA Tour players or anybody involved with the PGA Tour is going to trust Jay Monahan after what happened last year. But it is crazy to go back to the beginning of everything and think about, you know, we're, what, a year and a half, 2 years down the road, and now Yasser is meeting with Tiger Woods and Jay Monahan at a, you know, private location in the Bahamas. Yeah. It is pretty amusing to think about after what we've seen transpire over the past couple of years. But, fellas, all of that aside, coming off a week where we had the Players' Championship, yes, we had some solid names up at the top of the leaderboard, but it was missing former Players' Champion Cam Smith. It was missing John Rahm. It was missing Brooks Koepka. It was missing Dustin Johnson, who's playing well so far this year. It was missing Joaquin Niemann and Taylor Gooch. I just hope that during these conversations, both sides have decided to compromise a little bit. Just look at it for what it is. The players got their guaranteed money, which obviously is a good thing. And I'm not just talking about the players on Live. Look at what they were playing for this week. $4.5 million at the Players' Championship. For the players, Live has been nothing but a great blessing to them, whether you're talking about PGA Tour players or Live players. But now it's time for both sides to compromise and unite the game of golf to where the top guys play against each other more than four times a year. Not only do the fans deserve it, but the history of golf deserves it, because I don't want to be looking 50 years down the line and looking at Players' Championships or even major championships and saying, well, not all of the best players were there. And so, in my opinion, for tournaments like the Masters or the Majors or, you know, the Players' Championship, those tournaments, those signature events and major championships should just take the top 15 guys off of the Live standings, and then you can coexist separately. I think we're too far down the road to bring the Live guys back to a PGA Tour schedule or try to integrate PGA Tour guys into a Live schedule and make it some team deal. Just coexist separately on weeks that aren't signature events and have the top 15 guys from the Live standings play in those events. I think that that is literally the answer, even though it sounds ridiculously easy and stupid, T-Dub.
It's going to be a pyramid type structure is what it'll be. You have whatever PGA Tour Enterprises will be the new World Tour, as we've been talking about endlessly on this show. That'll be the top dog, and then you'll have the PGA Tour and Live. In my opinion, that's how it'll work. They'll kind of branch out from there and be their own entities from there. But the biggest tournaments will all have all the best players in it. I at least surely hope that happens down the road. I think events are transpiring to where that is going to be the eventual outcome. The question is, how long will it take? As I said earlier, a lot of moving parts. Things have to get worked out. We'll just see. One thing I will miss, though, if we do have a kumbaya and everyone does come back together, is the argument between Brandel Chamblee and Paul McGinley on Live From, because Brandel tries to talk about how strong the field is, and McGinley's up there talking about how, no, the Live guys would make this such a better field. It's definitely funny entertainment watching Brandel, you know, kind of pee down his leg because he doesn't know what to say whenever it's clearly obvious that there's players who should be in the field and would make it drastically better. But at the end of the day, it ended up, as I said earlier, the best tournament of the year. And I think it's going to be hard to surpass that. It was so many events lined up to be extremely good. And then earlier, just talk about the Jay Monahan point. I wrote this down and forgot to say it. I just can't imagine the people who could possibly believe that Jay Monahan sits down with Tiger Woods and Yasser, and those two will look at Jay Monahan and give two shits about anything that he says. That is just a crazy world to think that anyone believes that that's a possibility.
I mean, no, I agree with you, T-Dub. It is hilarious thinking about Yasser, the powerful man that he is, and Tiger, the powerful man that he is, and then Jay Monahan all in the same room and trying to, you know, Jay Monahan's in there trying to get his points across. It's just funny to think about. But let me ask you guys this. Back to my point on the top 15 guys on LIV getting into these big events. Who would be opposed to Neiman, Rahm, DJ, Paul Casey, Abe Anser, Taylor Gooch, Bryson DeChambeau, Cam Smith, Louis Oosthuizen, Charles Howell III, Sergio, Dean Burmester, Peter Uihlein, Charles Schwartzel, and Brooks Koepka? Those are your top 15 on LIV right now in order. I got a lot of heat for saying 15 off LIV on Twitter should be in the major championships, but Brooks Koepka's 15th right now, and he won a major championship last year, T-Dub.
What people don't realize whenever people, you know, want to criticize the point being made is majority of these guys are already exempt onto next year. And even if you want to go off last year's standings, you would have a lot of major champions. Really, the guys that wouldn't be in there were our man, Taylor Gooch. You'd have guys like Harold Varner III, Mino Pereira, Brendan Grace, Peter Uihlein, Anirban Lahiri, Carlos Ortiz would be in the top 15 from last year. And that's not including if you want to go off this year where they added Rahm and Hatton, who will knock down essentially two players. So it's, when people want to criticize that, they're not looking at the fact of half of them, maybe more than half, are already in the majors because they've won majors over the last 5 years. And then all the other guys are proven great players. They were great players on the PGA Tour. It hasn't changed. And in some senses, like our man Taylor Gooch, you go to LIV and you become a better player. So, yeah, it's a clear solution. You could do that or you could give the events world ranking points, whatever you want to do. But LIV, it's not going to be one of those things where I don't think it's solvents goes away. I don't see that being a thing. I think it's still going to be there. To what extent, we'll have to wait and see. So yeah, to get these guys in there, it needs to be done, and it will be done at some point. The question is when.
Hey, Sam, we also forget that money boost that the tour got from the Boston Red Sox owners and all those
Strategic
guys.
Sports Group, all that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're taking that part of that, like $950 million, and they're giving it to the top 35 guys on the PGA Tour that they feel like stayed and did their thing. So, yeah, there were some guys that probably will get more than others, meaning the LIV guys probably got paid a little more than the PGA Tour guys might, but they're still going to get a big chunk of change. So the argument that they're throwing out there saying, well, these guys took the money, they knew what they were going to get into, yada, yada, yada. Well, if you guys on the PGA Tour really felt that strongly about that, you wouldn't take the $950 million and divvy it up between you 35, okay? So that's the hypocrite coming out in it again. So for goodness sake, let's not forget that the PGA Tour guys are going to get a big bonus for being loyal to the PGA Tour. They kind of just slipped that in, and that kind of has gone away. But that's a big deal, in my opinion.
Yeah, and as far as them being hypocritical, think about those first meetings that were going on that the PGA Tour were having last year. Who wasn't involved in this meeting? Who wasn't involved in this meeting? The leader of the DP World Tour, Keith Pelley? Yeah. The PGA Tour literally just made an alliance with the DP World Tour and then killed the DP World Tour. So, T-Dub, my point is, what's stopping LIV or the PIF from just buying the DP World Tour and merging with them and being a bigger tour than the PGA Tour?
I think there is an event or a world where that could definitely happen. The DP World Tour has made a lot of questionable decisions over these last couple of years. Essentially became the feeder tour to the PGA Tour. They sent their 10 best players over here, and now all of a sudden it used to be prestigious. Back before it was more of a global game, you had a lot of extreme players, like in the 70s and 80s, great players like Seve and all those guys. They never burned hard. They hardly ever came over here and played. But now, all of a sudden, they're trying to send their best guys over here. I don't understand why you'd want to do that, but that is how they decided to transpire things. And now it seems like they've just kind of been shoved to the side in this whole deal. I think it'd be great if LIV somehow kind of combined with them. I think it would live to what LIV is trying to do.
And I want to be clear about one thing. I'm not talking about LIV buying the DP World Tour as it is right now and becoming bigger than the PGA Tour. I'm saying that guys like Rory and other guys from different countries would find it maybe a little bit enticing if the DP World Tour was, you know, a more competitive tour and that they could play on that and make just as much, if not more, money.
Well, and the DP World Tour still has its big events. It has all the Dubai tournaments, which get great fields. It has the Whitworth, which always is a stellar event. They always have good tournaments at the start of the year, around January, February, and then towards when the PGA Tour is done with Alfred Dunhill, which is kind of Europe's version of the Pro-Am, AT&T Pebble Beach, where they play three great courses over there. So they still have their prestigious events. They'll have those. It's just the filler in there. I used to, up until the last couple of years, I used to love looking at DP World Tour events, but now you'll have, there's one this week, and Shane Lowry and Rasmus Højgaard are playing, but after that, it's slim pickings from there. So it used to be a little bit more deep tour Woody. At this point, it's hard to even watch it. It used to be nice to be able to wake up Sunday morning, turn on a little bit of DP World Tour at that point, time European Tour golf. It just isn't the same as it used to be, for sure.
Well, I think, no doubt. That's what, when it comes right down to it, I don't know who did it or if it was Monahan, that this was his whole idea, but the DP World Tour as we know it will become nothing but what, Sam, you've said all along, feeder tour. That's at best what it'll be. It'll be their version of a corn ferry that feeds guys onto the PGA Tour. Their DP Tour will feed guys onto the PGA Tour or whatever tour comes about. So, you know, the rich get richer, and that's the way life is. And the other guys, you know, the bottom dwellers are the guys fighting for the small fish in the sea, trying to get up to the big fishes. It's going to get harder and harder. I'll just say that.
No doubt about it. So we'll keep you updated on if anything comes out of that meeting, which it sounds like they're going to be extremely tight-lipped until a finalization on the negotiation has been made. But until then, we're just kind of stuck thinking about the same things that we were already thinking about before this meeting ever even existed. I guess the meeting was constructive, but hey, if they did get a deal done, they're not going to tell us if they did. So I guess we'll keep you updated if we hear anything here on the 73rd hole. Other than that, it'll just be pure speculation on our part. We need to hit another break here on the 73rd hole podcast. After the break, we got our Valspar preview, so stay with us.
Hey everyone, T-Dub here. I want to take a second to tell you about my good friends at McRae Roofing. Not too long ago, my roof was in desperate need of repair. There was extensive hail damage and I had many leaks that needed attention. Not only did Jeff and his staff build me a new roof, but they walked me through step by step of the claims process, which is something that I was very, very concerned about. Everything from the initial inspection of the roof to analyze all the damage to meeting with the insurance adjuster to make sure they were aware of every damaged area, making sure my claim was accurate. Their custom copper creations are truly beautiful and add a great touch to any roof. Not only do they do residential roofs, but they have an elite list of commercial customers, including Gallardia Country Club, Oak Tree National, and Bass Pro Shops. Check out their website at McRaeRoofing.com to view some of their work yourself and give them a call at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000.
We'd like to welcome in our newest sponsor for the 24 season, Allcom Security. They're located in Midwest City. It's an Oklahoma-based company by Oklahomans. If you have any alarm needs, whether it's home or business, or what they have now that I am fascinated by, and I think you would be too, they're OKC security trailers. These trailers aren't just your average surveillance units. They're equipped with cutting-edge technology that can distinguish between humans and vehicles. Imagine that. With precise accuracy, these trailers detect any unwanted activity on your property, whether it's a person wandering where they shouldn't be or a vehicle creeping around after hours. It's like having a vigilant guardian watching over your domain. I have personally seen these units, and they are amazing. So if you have any alarm need, please call my good friends at Allcom Security, 405-732-9000, or just look them up on the web, Allcom Security.
And we are back on the other side of the break on the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. We do have the Valspar Championship this week, and the defending champion is friend of the show, Taylor Moore. So definitely look out for him this week. I'm excited to see him defend his championship for the first time on the PGA Tour. But we do have a bunch of solid names this week at the Valspar, playing in this non-signature event. We got Xander Schauffele. We have Sam Burns, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, and Brian Harman are your top five favorites this week. T-Dub, do you think that the winner comes out of the top five?
It's a very stellar top five. My one-and-done pick will be just outside of the top five, so hopefully that is not the case. But you look at the percentages, Schauffele has a 13% chance to win, which is very, very high. Sam Burns is at second, just a little over 5%, who absolutely loves this course. He won here in 2021, 2022 back to back, finished sixth last year, finished 30th and 12th his other two appearances. So absolutely loves him a little Valspar. Absolutely love this course. What is it, the snake pit down there? Is it 15, 16, 17? Those tough holes. And I love 16, that dogleg right, par four. It's a very, very tricky golf course. Our man Taylor Moore won last year at 10 under, the only guy to get to double digits on the par, shows how tricky of a course he can play. He shot four under in the final round and gained more than three shots a pro. So hopefully our man T. Moore can replicate a little bit of the stellar golf that he did exactly a year ago to this date, Woody. One thing that's interesting is that this course, relative to other PGA Tour courses, you hit a lot more 175 to 250-yard shots. So look for guys that are really good long iron players to excel at this course. That seems to be the trend over these last couple of years of guys that excel here.
You know, Innisbrook has a number of golf courses down there. I played the Southern Amateur there in 1978. We were supposed to play the Snake Pits. We were supposed to play Copperhead. They'd had so much rain, we got moved to the Island course, which I guess makes sense because it's an island, and it was surrounded by water that week too. I can tell you that. So there's a lot of good golf courses down there. If people ever go down that way and want to play golf, this golf course is a tough test. I mean, we actually played a practice round on it, so getting ready, and then they moved us to the other one, the Island course. So it's everything you want as far as ball striking. You guys are right. It'll take a good shot maker. I don't know why we wouldn't pull for our team more again, because if he's played there good once, like Sam Burns, a lot of times you got courses for horses, and these guys that play there and play their good like Taylor did last year, Sam Burns has in the past, hard to go against those guys. I would look for guys with good track records on that golf course. I know Spieth has been up there a couple of times also. Now, he's not playing the best golf, but he seems to like this golf course. So if your guys are out there gambling, you're looking for your one-and-dones, and you're looking to pick some, look for guys that have played this golf course well.
I completely agree with that. Yeah, Jordan Spieth finished third here last year and has won at Innisbrook in the past. But I want to start with Taylor Moore, fellas. Taylor Moore has now not missed a cut since the Open Championship last year. He's teed it up 12 different times since then. But it's a lot of 30th to, you know, 45th finishes there for T. Moore. Can you break down T. Moore's game over, you know, the past I don't know, 12, 13 tournaments, T-Dub, where he's making a ton of cuts, but he's just not contending on the weekend.
Well, relative to the seven starts that he did in 2024 compared to what he did in 2023, he's just not putting as good as he was. Last year, he gained 0.4 shots on the greens, which is very, very good compared to everyone else, for sure. But this year, he's right around even on that. He's losing 0.01, which is essentially dead even. So he's not being able to, he's not putting as good. We know, well, I've seen him make countless putts in my life. The putts that you think, well, there's no way he's going to make this. And he'll just bury and he'll do that time after time after time. One of the best putters I ever saw. And then just been streaky on the other areas. Out of his last seven, this year his seven tournaments, he's lost strokes gained approach. Three of them he's lost strokes gained off the tee. So, but promising sign is that he gained strokes in every area. Last week at the Players where he finished 31st, the question that you'll have is that being the defending champion, you have a lot more obligations than you do than just showing up and trying to get the ball in the hole. So it'll be interesting to see if that kind of weighs on him at any point. But besides that, Woody, I expect him to have a very solid week. Do I think he'll repeat as champion? Probably not. I would love to see it. There's a lot of other great players in this field. It would look really good if he was able to. I expect him to have a strong finish, and hopefully his best finish this year is T25 at the Century, which had a very limited field. Other than that, his best finish is T31, as he did last week. He also did that at the Genesis. I prognosticate that his best finish of the year will come this week.
I hope so. You know what it kind of reminds me of, though, is our little buddy Austin Ekro. You know, he hadn't really contended. He was just making cuts, and he was playing some pretty decent golf. And that's kind of when you think he's made 12 cuts in a row, that you got to play really good golf out there, guys, just to make cuts. So that does tell me that he's playing some really good golf if he's made 12 cuts in a row. We all have been there. All it takes is 1 week with that putter, and all of a sudden you go from, what, outhouse to the penthouse. I mean, it's just that quick. So maybe this week or maybe in the next couple of weeks, but I think Taylor might get in there and get his second win.
That would be amazing if he won back-to-back years at the Valspar Championship. I want to bring up a guy that we used to talk about and love all the time on this show from the University of Texas, Doug Gim. Fellas, Doug Gim, who I loved at Texas. He was a very, you know, eccentric little fella. You know what I mean? Like, he was a very fun guy to play golf with, you know, growing up in junior golf and college golf, and I've always rooted for him. And he kind of got off to a slow start in his PGA Tour career, but has figured it out this year. At the Farmers, 13th, Waste Management, 12th, Mexico Open, 8th, and then finished tied for 16th at the Cognizant and at the Players Championship, fellas. And he has gained shots on the greens in 4 out of those 5 events. And the putter is what really hindered him over the past couple of years. Doug Gim is back, and I am actually picking Doug Gim in the one and done this week at a place where he lost half a shot on the field for the event per round on the greens last year at Innisbrook and still finished tied for 27th. So he clearly likes the layout of the golf course, and now the putter's hot. I see Doug Gim winning this golf tournament this week, T-Dub.
Oh, Sam, I was very upset with myself because being one of the founders of the show, having the Doug Gim button was one of the best things ever. For the OG listeners, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. For those of you that don't, anyone that's seen the classic movie, The Hangover, when they're trying to look for Doug, they play the song on the piano. I'm not going to try to recite it at this point. Everyone out there knows what it is. Anytime we talked about Doug Gim, we had to press the button. On the 8 buttons on my soundboard, I do not have it. I need to download it and bring it back. It was a great tradition. It was on Colby's soundboard. So when Colby departed from the 73rd hole, the Doug Gim button also did as well. That is something that can definitely be rectified. So I will be adding the Doug Gim button going forward. And I sure hope that you're right, Sam, because he is also my pick. The problem is that every other time we pick the same player, he plays like absolute crap. So I expect that to happen again now.
I'm sitting here listening to this and going, you both are picking Doug Gim. You know, we're going to lose some followers and listeners out there. If they think that we're this crazy, that you two picked the
same guy every week, it seems like, and you're picking Doug Gim. Okay, so here's the good news for me is I'm going to be at a golf tournament next Tuesday. I probably might not make the show. I'll keep you posted. So if Doug Gim wins, you can make fun of Woody, because I think you guys are crazy this week. I think you're nuts for picking him. But let's see what happens. I don't know. If he wins, like I say, I got to eat a lot of crow.
Full disclosure, I was between him and Nick Taylor, and I don't want to use some of those top guys for the one and done.
I mean, obviously,
it would be boring if I did a podcast and just pick Xander Schauffele, who has a massive analytical chance to win, or Sam Burns. I mean, yes, Sam Burns probably has a better chance to win the golf tournament than Doug Gim or Justin Thomas or Jordan Spieth or Brian Harman or Sung J.M., but that would be boring, Woody. I'm trying to go outside the box a little bit, and I know how T-Dub's brain works, so I make my pick based on what I think he's going to pick, and then it makes him look like he's just copying my picks.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's perfect.
Woody, you can't argue with a couple of facts. One, last five events, top 16, that's pretty good stuff. And then, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't he the number one ranked amateur in the world at a point in time?
Yes, he was.
Very, very talented.
Only
27 years old, not even 28 years old yet. A lot of golf left to be played for Doug Gim.
I know. If I didn't make fun of y'all, it wouldn't be any fun. So, like I said, make me eat crow with this Doug Gim. I'm going to be I'm literally going to a golf tournament this weekend, and it goes into Tuesday. I'm going to be watching, though, from down in Trinity, Texas, guys. I'm going down to play that Robertson Cup at the probably one of the finest golf courses I've ever seen, Whispering Pines, down there in Trinity, Texas. They play the Big 12 there about every other year, it seems like. But I'll be watching this weekend, guys, watch the golf tournament. If I'm sitting down there and I look up and I see Doug Gim on the leaderboard, I'm going to have to tell all my buddies that are down there with me, I'm going to go, boy, am I going to get me some crow eating this week. Okay, so I'm pulling for you. I'm just shocked.
And this is a tip for some of our listeners out there who are in one-and-done pools where you pick one player each week, then are not allowed to use them again the rest of the year. We always talk about wasting the big-name guys. Well, you can also waste some of the lesser-name guys like a Doug Gim, who's playing really good golf right now, but might not be playing great golf at the end of the year, right, T-Dub? So I want to use him while he's still hot. Hopefully he's still hot. Hopefully this isn't the week where he misses the cut.
Yeah, you want to get a golfer when they're trending, Stan. The problem is that trends always will go up, and then they'll go down at some point. The question is, are we going to catch the very start of the bottom, or are we going to keep riding the momentum that Doug Gim has presented? Hopefully it will be hopefully we'll keep going up the ladder for sure. And also for the one-and-done pool, one of the reasons you'll say, well, why don't you want to use a big-name player if you think that they're going to win the purse this week? Is 8.4 million compared to last week, which was $25 million purse. The winner this week, it's 1.5 million compared to 4.5 last week. So that is why I choose not to use a bigger name at this event, because unless they win, 1.5 million is fairly solid. But in relative terms, using someone like a Xander Schauffele, even if they finish third or fourth, especially if you get the ties in there, it's not going to be very good whenever you look at the payout in some of these elevated signature events and even the major championships.
That's exactly right, T-Dub. A couple other guys that I think could play well this week, Nick Taylor, who is the 41st ranked player on Data Golf, 24th ranked player in the official World Golf ranking, and the 11th ranked player on the FedEx Cup ranking so far this year. You know, he won the Waste Management earlier on this year. He finished tied for 26th. Last week at the Players, he finished tied for 12th. The week before that at Bay Hill, he's been playing some really solid golf. And he finished tied for 10th here at the Valspar last year. And I'm also very interested to see what Sung J.M. is going to do this week, because we always talk about him in the state of Florida. He always seems to have success on Bermuda grass. And he finished tied for 29th at the Valspar 2 years ago in 2021. He didn't play it last year. And in 2019, he finished tied for fourth. But Sungjae has not been near as consistent as he has been in previous years recently tied for 66th, tied for 44th. You know, he missed the cut at the Cognizant Classic. He did finish 18th at the Arnold Palmer and then finished tied for 31st at the Players' Championship. What do you think's going on with Sungjae, T-Dub?
Well, every single analytical stat looks about the same with one glaring exception, and that is the iron play. Every single year, he's gained strokes with the irons throughout the nine events that he's played this year. He's losing strokes with the irons. Every single other metric is within about 0.1 as to what his average has been ever since he came out on tour, going all the way back to 2019. Still has a lot of golf to be played. He's only 25 years old now, 26 years. He'll be 26 here pretty soon. One thing that is a good sign is that his last two events, he has gained strokes gained with the irons. Went through a drastically downstretch with the irons from the American Express in the middle of January all the way up to the Cognizant at the start of March. Hopefully he's got it turned around, but that has definitely been what has been holding him back. He's also struggled with the putter a few times, but he's kind of made up for that by putting really, really good some weeks. So I guess you could throw a streaky putter in there as well, but definitely the majority thing that he has been holding him back has been the irons.
I don't care about any of those guys. I'm all in on Doug Gim now, so I don't care about all those other guys. I'm a Doug Gim fan.
Oh, good stuff. Any other guys you want to talk about, T-Dub, before we get out of here and send people on their way to watch the Valspar Championship this weekend?
Our man Brian Harman is the fifth player analytically behind Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, and Sam Burns. Of course, that would fit him definitely for sure. I mentioned the iron play having to be good with the long irons. There's also, of course, that you don't need to overpower. Traditionally, accuracy off the tee has been more important than distance here. So look for guys that fit a Brian Harman style of game to excel out there as well. I mean, you scroll down here, and you have some kind of bigger names, as I mentioned, in the top five, then like a Cameron Young there. Aaron Rye's sneakily been playing some solid golf. Minwoo Lee was playing a lot better earlier in the year. He's kind of plateaued a little bit. Not really, of course, if it's his game, but at men's talent, he may be able to break it. Look at other guys like a Bo Hostler or a Lucas Glover. He's played this course a lot and has played very well in the past. The problem is he can't putt. He's worse than Scottie Scheffler was putting last year, which is absolutely saying something. So I expect it to be a fairly top-heavy tournament. I expect the top 10 to 15 guys will predominantly be there at the top of the leaderboard.
Like I said, I'm going to be playing golf myself this weekend. I'm going down to play the Robertson Cup at Whispering Pines in Trinity, Texas. It's my once-a-year golf tournament that I take a bunch of members down there, and we play in this little – I still say it's one of the best golf courses you'll ever set foot on. If you ever get a chance to play Whispering Pines in Trinity, Texas, do it.
Obviously a great track there. Have fun this weekend, Woody. And for our college golf fans out there, the Oklahoma Sooners are also down in Florida. And next week we'll be playing in the Valspar Collegiate Championship at Floridian National Golf Club in Palm City, Florida. So they're teeing it up next week on March 25th and 26th. So definitely be looking for that. And then they will be headed to Augusta on April 6th and April 7th. So definitely be looking for the Sooners going forward. As far as the Cowboys are headed to Eugene, Oregon next week to take on the Ducks up there in the Duck Invitational at Eugene Country Club up in Oregon on March 25th and 26th. And then they will go down to Augusta to play the Haskins Award Invitational, a different tournament in Augusta than what OU is playing on April 6th and April 7th. That'll do it for us here on the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. Everyone, enjoy the golf this weekend. Woody, enjoy the golf next week that you're playing down at Whispering Pines. T-Dub, thanks. Woody, thanks. And everyone, enjoy watching either Doug Gim win the Valspar or Taylor Moore defend his championship down at Innisbrook as well. This has been Sam Humphreys on Oklahoma's Leader in Golf, the 73rd Hole Podcast.